Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
Insofar as the EV industry and the automotive industry, if we hold true to the long-standing process of paying well, we'll be fine.
Do we get a nodding of the head on that
two,
one?
Two nods.
Two nods. Okay.
First of all, on the point about meeting the employee numbers, I absolutely agree with you. But your earlier point is the most fascinating, right? This is part of our value proposition around the world. I say, you can go to the States, go to Kentucky and have your battery built, 6% clean energy. They use coal. Go to Alabama and have your vehicle assembled, 18% clean energy. Build your car with steel made from coal. Or you can come to Ontario. You have 94%, arguably, clean energy assembling the vehicle. We'll sell clean energy credits to Stellantis and to Volkswagen. They'll have 100% clean energy battery. And thanks to ArcelorMittal, Dofasco, you are having the switch from coal to electric arc furnace. You will have green steel. Now think about driving with pride a vehicle built in Ontario with clean energy, green steel, versus any car built anywhere in the U.S.
Josipa.
This is a real proposition, and this one I do want us to get into a little bit here. The reality is anything built in Ontario and Canada is going to be expensive, right? We're not paying Mexican wages here. That's the truth of it. But what is the real proposition, exactly as the minister flagged and so did Greg? It is the green electricity. Mm-hmm. And this is not because these plants, again, have woken up as manufacturing CEOs and said, let's go green. Because if they had, they wouldn't have spent the last 15 years trying to sue the government of the United States to undo climate action, right? Mm-hmm. So what has happened is there's enough governments have moved ahead saying, you're going to be hit with carbon pricing at the border. Mm-hmm. That's going to drive up the price of your products, no matter where you built it, in coal producing, whatever jurisdiction of the world, it's going to become extremely expensive. You won't be able to sell your stuff. So now the proposition is really there, that we have a green grid. Back to my original point, though, the real ability to keep this investment through the long term in the ecosystem is to make sure our grid stays green, which means no to natural gas plants. It does mean upgrading Darlington and nuclear. It does mean continuing the investments in green energy.
We have, you know, an unprecedented situation. 10 of, I think, 23 public universities reporting deficits right now. We have one university with many thousands of their staff on strike. This is a drop in the bucket. And at the same time, for as much as the premier might say that he's got the backs of students, not a single dollar is going towards OSAP in the midst of an affordability crisis.
The student assistance plan.
Exactly. It's simply inadequate. It misses the mark entirely.
Mike Schreiner, your view.
Well, I think the premier and his minister needs to go back to college and university to study math because their math doesn't add up. I mean, first of all, as Peggy said, the Blue Ribbon panel said $2.5 billion over 3 years. They gave $1.2 billion, half of that. That was before the federal government made their decision to cap international students. That's going to cost universities $1.8 billion. So the $400 million per year over the next 3 years is like 20% of just dealing with the cost of the international student cap. Ontario, as my colleagues have said, ranked last of all provinces. If we want to even get up to the national average, that would be funding of around $7 billion. So it doesn't add up, and it's hurting our students, it's hurting our economy, and it's hurting our post-secondary education sector.
You referenced the federal visa situation, and let's get into that right now, because that will deprive the post-secondary system, cutting back on the number of foreign students, by $1.8 billion, as you suggested, Mike. So, Alex, next question becomes, was that the right move for the feds to take, given the impact it's about to have on 47 colleges and universities across this province?
I'm not sure how what other choices they had, to be honest with you. I mean, colleges in particular, Ontario colleges in particular, got greedy over the last 2 or 3 years, and they brought in more students. And yes, originally, for some of them, that was about, you know, making up for government cutbacks. There's no question that the amount of money coming in from international students vastly exceeded what was cut from the budget for colleges. So, you know this, you're from that part of the, you're from Conestoga's part of the world where they went from 11,000 to 33,000 students, and you see what that did to the housing market. I think Mark Miller went out and was pretty consistent for about 6 months and saying, guys, I'm going to do this.
The federal don't immigration
make me do
minister.
This. Yes, Mark Miller, the federal immigration minister, said, don't make me do this. And everybody ignored him. They just assumed he couldn't do it. And we have the situation we have. I think you can say, you know, that all these international students are they're kind of an externality of governments not paying for funding. Mm-hmm. They said, look, you can't get money from domestic students. We're not going to give you money. The only place you can go and get money are international students. You can bring in more of them. You can charge them more money. And that's how the system has been working for the last 12 years.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.